All right. Welcome to episode number 53 of the Dan Time Podcast. I'm your host, Dan McArdle. This is fun stuff today. A friend of mine, we go back about 30 years, three decades, a big stretch of time where we didn't really know what was going on in each other's lives very intimately. That's what makes this so exciting, and I hope this show promotes reconnecting with people, or if someone's a phone call or a text away, or somebody's on a text chain that you don't interact with directly, maybe this inspires you to get that going. John Hunter, my good friend John Hunter, is the guest today. John, how you doing, man?
I'm great, Daniel. Dan, whatever you're going by these days.
Hey, and you hear that? If you hear Daniel, that means that someone has known me a long time.
That's right. Yeah, I'm fantastic, and I'm so glad to be talking with you today and reconnecting with you. You know, I kind of stumbled on to your show and
my experiment here.
It's a fantastic experiment, and I love where it's gone. I love that you've stuck with it. You know, so much to where I called you out of the blue. It had been quite some time since we had talked, just to kind of tell you how I've thought about the show. And yeah, I think it's something special. I like the message that messages that you hit on at various points in each episode of, you know, all the positive encouragement. And I think that's what everybody could use right now.
Yeah, that was a really special phone call. I remember seeing your name pop up, and everybody has an incoming call every once in a while. You're like, oh, wow, Aunt Tina is calling me. She never calls me. I hope this isn't serious. And then so I saw John Hunter, and I'm like, shoot, I got to grab this. And yeah, that really meant a lot to me that day. Yeah, I don't know who all is listening. There's people that listen to the show and get a lot out of it, and it might be a friend or a cousin of mine, and I appreciate everybody who checks it out. But from you, especially, John, and your background, that was pretty special.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. You know who is probably listening is your brother, Travis.
Oh, yeah.
Your younger brother, Travis. And I think that's where our connection comes from. You know, we do probably go back to about 93, 94. I met your brother in sixth grade, and we connected really quickly and became fast friends. And, you know, through that I spent a considerable amount of time around your house and your family. You know, you guys were a pretty big influence at that point in my life, you know, in good ways and hysterical ways.
John, you remember being, I guess you would have been 15 and I was 16. I was talking to Travis about this. There's only a couple people, maybe three, you and Michael and Greg, that I can remember that carpooled with me. I just got my license. I'm in the Red Rocket.
Protégé. Yeah.
The Mazda Protégé. You remember that? And the music selections that I would blast for you guys in the back seat?
Yes.
Kind of rude when you look back on it, but.
Well, I mean, I'd say that was probably my, you know, introduction to metal.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the McArdle family, the McArdle brothers introduced me to metal. I mean, your older brother, Robert, like at that age, what a mythical character. You know, I mean,
it really was.
I'm in 7th and 8th grade going downstairs to play some pool in your basement, and there's this true metal rock star living down there.
He was waving the flag and wearing the uniform.
Oh yeah, long hair, the black leather jacket with zippers everywhere, ripped up jeans, and
the boots.
I mean, yes, the biker boots. I mean, he had a band called Impalement, and I would give anything to put in an Impalement cassette tape right now.
I probably do have there was an EP that they released and then a full length, and I've got some of this stuff at least on cassette. I think I've got a digital copy. But people wonder sometimes, you know, speaking of heavy metal music, like when you get to be our age, I think it is more acceptable now than it was. Kind of like you were either in that crowd or you were in this crowd back in the 90s or even
Absolutely.
Like 2002 or 5 or something. Now I think people really cross-pollinate a lot more. But, you know, people wonder what got Dan, you listen to that stuff? I'm like, well, yeah, I had an older brother that, whether I liked it or not, which I did, you know, exposed me to a lot of that music. I remember when I don't want to talk too much about me because this is John Hunter time today. I do remember in the Red Rocket, the very first CD, I think I got my license, I put the down payment on that car, and I had a mail order CD. Remember those Guitar Rock compilations that were from certain eras? And I think it was like 72 to 75. I'll never forget listening to Ramblin' Man and Freebird. I mean, that's just synonymous with classic rock now, but it was new to my ears. And the guitar solos in Ramblin' Man and Freebird, I was hooked. I played it over and over and wanted to hear it louder and louder. And then, you know, one thing leads to another and you're onto the heavyweights of
one
of
thing
metal.
Leads to another and you're just, you know, neck deep in death metal.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a cutoff when you get to the extreme end of the, like, Norwegian black metal or some stuff I just didn't dip my toe into very far. But anyway, sure. So we go back a long time, John, and I just have special memories. You know how some people, well, everybody changes over time. You know, sometimes people try out different personas. That's common in the high school years and even the 20s stuff, and they dress differently. John, I got to say, this is a compliment. You have always been the version of you that I'm talking to today. When I think back in those teenage years, it's the same guy. Like you have a quality about you that is very, very endearing. I'm sure your colleagues would say the same thing. And you know who you are. You like who you are. This is what I do, is who I am. And you've got a very infectious smile. So I really want to put that out there. I don't get a chance through this podcast. I do get to tell friends what I really think about them. And usually that's not a great thing, but I got to pay you that compliment, John.
No, that's great. I appreciate that, Daniel. You know, I, like anyone else, I feel a little bit the opposite, you know, completely lost in middle school and high school, you know, feel like you do a 180 with finding out who you are, you know, at this point. I mean, I'm it's cool that you have that perception, and I very much believe that people change and people should be changing and evolving your entire life. You know, if I was just having a conversation with my dad about that yesterday at lunch, just trying to, even if you're doing the same things every day, trying to do them differently, you know, so that you're just at least creating just new things in your brain. You know, point is just trying to keep it interesting and just keep evolving.
Yeah, like one thing I've kind of gotten onto the past maybe 10 years or so, and it's something you hear in the workplace, and some of this stuff is pretty cliche, but having a learning mindset. That's one of those catchphrases from the corporate world that I don't really mind. I kind of like that. Have a learning mindset in life.
Yeah, I mean, that's that is really how I have come to do what I do in my career. And you know, I went to school for music business and did not end up going into that. Took a different turn into the commercial film production world. So I, you know, I did not go to school for that and have just continuously learned from others in this business and done, you know, as much research and learning on my own as I can. Cause it, you know, if I'm not doing that, then, it's going to pass me by incredibly quickly and there'll be 15 people younger than I am who will be able to do it, you know, three times better than I can. So it's fun. I mean, it's fun to just keep going and keep learning and getting better at it.
Yeah. In your role as a, so you're senior editor and director of photography with Lucky & Company. In this role, I guess I have to imagine, now that you mention it, you really got to stay on the cutting edge.
Yeah. I mean, from where things were when I started, you know, back in the beginning of like 2008, it's a completely different landscape. And in the way that commercials and video content is created, you know, from all levels, from capture to finish and delivery, also even as far back as how things are concepted, you know, it's a completely different landscape. And that's the same with any industry, but yeah, mine definitely relies heavily on technology, and it's really getting interesting, especially with the onset of AI and how that's creeping into the video production world. So just paying attention as much as possible, because it's interesting.
Now, when you're working with clients, what's your primary role for someone that's not really familiar with this type of thing?
Well, it depends on the size of the project. You know, if it is a large project, maybe meant for regional or national television, then I'm could be operating as the director of the project, you know, director of the commercial, or a lot of times director and director of photography, which means I'm, you know, operating the camera and making stylistic choices for how the film or commercial is going to look and feel. And a lot of times also acting as the editor, but sometimes we, you know, outsource to external editors and things like that. But if it's a smaller project, then typically I'm pretty involved in the concepting of it, and then shooting and directing that as well, and editing and just kind of handling all aspects of it. So,
John,
it is always different.
Gosh, I can imagine.
It's always different. Every project is. I could slip into the feeling that it's becoming the same, but it's. It's pretty hard to. It's always some completely different realm of a different industry or different product or client. It's cool.
And you mentioned with AI, this is just a whole different. Back when you're talking about 2008 or even 10, 12, up to 2016 or 18, if you're a creative and you can utilize AI, I guess, gosh, I'm so unprepared to talk about this concept, but
yeah.
Is there a concern that people will look at your work and think that, well, you know, that's his vision, but it was heavily influenced by AI?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a concern yet, but, you know, I guess of all the things that we use AI for, or that we thought we would use AI for, you know, making our lives more efficient and productive, and I'm all for that. You know, I think that's great, and that is inevitable. It's going to happen. But for something that's such a human thing to do, like in terms of being creative or making creative choices, art, for us to implement AI into that world has been very surprising to me. And, you know, it's just a bummer. Ultimately, I wish that it hadn't gone that way, but it has, and so it's here. And I mean, you really have to embrace it. And I've already seen it happening. You know, I've seen plenty of artistic video pieces that have been created entirely from AI prompts, and they're super interesting. I mean, it's, you can't deny it, but I kind of wish it was, I don't know, I guess I also just haven't completely formed a full opinion on how I feel about it yet, because I've never actually used that technology to create something. And maybe if I did, I would have a different feeling about it. Maybe I would be excited about it. You know, maybe that would spark something that I thought was, you know, wow, I can't believe we're actually able to do this. This is, I wouldn't be able to come close to this if I hadn't used this technology. But for right now, I kind of see it as like using AI in the creative world to give you creative inspiration to go right. create something and help you form your vision to show to other people. That's how we use it right now in advertising, using things to like just creating mood board type stuff to get a more dramatic vision across to a client. But we can't use it in any actual client work because it's still too much of the Wild West from a legal standpoint. Wow, we have really gone off on a AI tangent.
Yeah. But. Well, and I did want to mention that, you know, a lot of companies like Lucky are utilizing AI for, you know, when it comes to software development and the quality assurance aspect of it. I think this is really an added tool, I guess.
Well, the tough thing about it for advertising is that what we spend the most time on in advertising, when you create a piece and you show it to your client or you show it internally to the rest of your team, you have to be able to make revisions to it, and which could mean having to repeat the same thing or recreate the same kinds of things over and over again. But just like at a core level, certain things have to be the same while making little alterations. And with AI, you just have no control over that. So in that way, it really just doesn't work yet for the majority of our needs.
Well, moving on to some big projects that you've been a part of, the U.S. Civil Rights Trail, of course, Little Debbie and Regions Bank are big clients. Talk a little bit about, it reminds me of old sports talk radio.
I have said it plenty of times in interviews because it helps people. I don't know. It just helps them get going, I think.
It does kind of allow for an open-ended response.
Yes.
But yeah, Coach, talk a little bit about your preparation for this week and what kind of defense you guys are.
And then if I was Nick Saban, I'd just look at you and say, well, we're ready.
Right.
I mean, what else do you want me to say?
I would love it. If I had somebody on the show here and I asked them a question, they said, what else do you want me to say, Dan?
I feel like Travis did that.
There was one episode. Travis did do it. There was one other episode, and I love this person. But it was kind of what kind of question is that? Was the response? But you have to know this person. I'm not going to give it away, male or female, to understand. I already knew that the sarcasm or whatever. But it's great. So some incentive to make sure that you're listening to all 53 episodes here, folks.
I love it. Well, as far as some of those projects you mentioned went, you know, the U.S. Civil Rights Trail project was, I mean, an absolute dream project to be involved with. We're getting to finally be a part of something that has some true meaning behind it. And, you know, you're focusing on a message that's and a message and a story that just needs to be told over and over and over again, as opposed to some of the types of things we can focus on in the advertising world that's not necessarily, you know, all that important to anyone except that one specific client. And that's great for them, you know, and for us too, for obvious reasons. But to be a part of that project was so cool, getting to travel all over the South and the Southeast and getting to, you know, see all of the landmarks and places where all of these stories took place and interview and speak with the people who lived the tales. I mean, getting to interview men and women who integrated schools for the first time and have them tell you about it and have them cry in front of you, and you, I'm hiding behind the camera crying as well. I mean, it was a really powerful project to be a part of. And fortunately, I don't think that it's done. I think it will get to continue to tell those stories, and I'm super excited about that.
I hope we do. When you think about just going back to our friendship and its origins, let's just call it 1994, that's 30 years. And if you go back to 94, 1964 was 30 years distance from that time period. We felt like when we were in high school learning about the civil rights movement, it felt like it was from the 1940s. You know, it just felt like a long, long time ago. And now you kind of see, or I do, why those times and that struggle and the awful things that went on were still so raw for people in the late 80s, the early 90s, the mid 90s. Because for them, as adults, it did not seem like that long ago. And I feel like we still have a lot of work to do.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, I was just talking to someone at dinner last night about this, that what was going on in high school, when we were in high school, at our school, was really not that much different. Like, they were having, certain people were having very similar experiences to people who were integrating schools in 1964. I mean, you know, there would be only a certain amount of African American kids in school with us. And I, at the time, you know, we really didn't think too much about that and their experience, what they were experiencing every day. It's only now that I can have that hindsight perspective after hearing the stories of these people who did it way back then. And the biggest thing that they talked about was not being bullied physically or, you know, just that kind of physical fear and things like that, but it was the isolation and all of their classmates and even all of their teachers completely ghosting them, you know, just acting like they were a ghost and didn't even exist. They said it was the most difficult thing they've ever encountered in their life. And I heard that, and I can't help but think that people might have been having that same experience in high school with us.
Yeah, this brings back a memory from fifth grade. We had a kid join our class as the year was in progress. His name was Alvis Price. And I remember his very first day, I had a couple buddies, Casey and Wes. We had tables of four students in the classroom. And so there was the three of us in an empty chair. And so Alvis sat with us. And he didn't look like us. He didn't dress like us. He didn't have nice shoes. He didn't have nice clothes on. And I, even at that age, I wanted to be his friend. I think Casey and Wes tried to welcome him as well. But I could kind of fill in a lot more to this story. But by seventh grade, you may have heard about this, but he committed suicide in seventh grade. And that year, we only, you know, when you get to middle school, is usually around the time where that's your first encounter with death, with classmates that, you know, have cancer or something, or an accident, car accident, something like that happens. Usually kind of around sixth, seventh grade, sometimes something earlier. But then we had two deaths in seventh grade, I think. And one was cancer, Adam Waugh, and then Alvis. And I don't know the circumstances of why, you know, 2 years later that happened to him, but you know, it was an affluent school, and if you didn't if you didn't look the part, and you weren't, I hate to say this, but like if you, there were some black kids that I think kind of fit in, but if you really didn't look like you were from our side of town, you just, it wasn't going to work out, and I didn't like that then.
You were going to feel it.
Yeah, so I just, that always has made me very sad. didn't know what kind of home life, you know, some of these people have. But when you go to school, I think about this because Warren just started first grade. I just hope that kids, whatever their home life is like, when they go to school, they feel like they belong.
Yeah.
And like you said, teachers, you know, if the classmates are going to ignore them or not include them in their group or whatever, the teacher should not fall in line with that.
Yeah, and I have to believe that it is not that way anymore, you know, because teachers back then were of the same age and mindset and indoctrined beliefs that everyone else was at that time. I think, I would hope and could only assume that is generation removed at this point. I don't know. But I mean, a lot of things have changed as far as like, almost like what's cool to do and what's cool to, how it's cool to think, you know, I mean, it used to be cool to smoke and now it's not, you know, for kids like that, for most kids like that at that age. So I would hope that, that certain ways of thinking and viewing other people have shifted a little bit at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I certainly hope so.
We are still in the South, but
yeah. And you know, it's nice to hear. And you and your wife Lauren have two beautiful children.
Yeah.
And my three children. And it's nice when you're out in public and people say, "Oh, your kids are so precious. They're so beautiful, and they're in this and that." And I really want to drive it home with my kids when they're old enough to know what we're talking about. That I want you to befriend the person that doesn't look like you. You know, that is maybe a little heavy set, or they don't have the striking good looks that you're blessed with. Mm-hmm. Be friends with that guy who's not part of the group. I hope that my kids can kind of interweave.
Yeah.
Be with the cool kids and be with the not so cool kids.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they take their cues from us. You know, I certainly did from my parents for the most part. And I know you guys, I can tell that, you know, all of the McArdle boys. I can tell.
Anybody, some train tracks there?
he saw me on the phone. He just wanted to. No, but I can tell all of the McArdle boys have taken their cues and learned how to navigate life through their dad. You guys have a fantastic father who I've always looked up to as well. I mean, it's pretty hard not to. I heard your episode with him and I thought it was awesome. I mean, as far as like, I have to pay the McArdle family this compliment of how close you guys are. And it, you know, you guys are like all best friends. You know, I have a younger brother, 4.5 years younger than me. And, you know, we have a relationship, but it's not that type of relationship. And it's one that I dream about and strive towards, but, you know, maybe it doesn't get to that level, but I sure wish it could someday. And just the relationship that you guys have is something special, and don't take it for granted, which I know you guys don't, but.
Yeah, a lot of that, you know, came from my dad trying to organize different, it was just the way things were structured, where we did things together. But I think you also have to have to enjoy each other's company. There's got to be some laughs there.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
it's the laughs that you guys, I mean, yeah, you get the three and four of y'all together. I mean, it's pretty hysterical.
Well, I tell everybody,
just feed off of each other so well.
I tell everybody, Travis is one of the funniest people, if not the funniest person that I know. And that's nothing against Robert. Robert would agree. Robert cracks me up too.
Yeah.
But Travis just has a delivery, and there are some things that we laugh about that, I mean, I can't believe I'm going to mention this, and I might cut it, but people our age remember like the Jerky Boys, the Phone Pranksters. Yeah. Well, there was like an, I would even call them a knockoff because I thought they were better, the Ball Busters.
Oh, yeah.
And
y'all,
I don't even know.
Introduced the Ball Busters to me.
Oh, my gosh. For a 15-year-old kid, it was a dream come true, this cassette tape. And then I got the CDs. There were like a couple volumes. And we could still drop a Ball Busters reference on a text message 30 years later. And that's the important thing, is just laughing about silly stuff that doesn't even matter.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the last times I can remember, like, that I can really remember a big group of our core high school friends being together was out at Michael Lukatic's lake house. And, you know, we had just kind of all assembled out there and just had a awesome night, you know, just got into all the stuff and ended the night by sitting out on the pier listening to the Ball Busters. I mean, we were all just in tears, you know, 20, 25 years later. I mean, still hit just as hard.
I got that CD or the cassette, like I said, when I was, I think, 15. I carried those CDs around in the Red Rocket and then probably into my second vehicle. I'm in my early 20s, mid-20s, and still from time to time, I would pop it in. And then there's the iPod. I would do an iPod shuffle, and I'd land on a Ball Busters track. Yeah, have to let it play. But it was really heartwarming to me that you guys found some laughs with it. Travis is, I don't know if you know this, but he's notoriously challenging to get a music reference over on and say, hey, Travis, you've got to listen to this song or this band. And it will take years.
Waylon, he's pretty rooted. He likes what he likes. And
but he wants you to like what he likes immediately. Oh, yeah. if not sooner. but he really took to it, and it's good. And your children are pretty young, but do they argue? Do they fight? Do they enjoy each other's company? Do you see some sweet moments between your son and daughter?
Well, I got a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son, and there are times when, you know, they are the best of friends, and it's the most beautiful thing ever. And but, you know, we're definitely in a phase where, you know, she's coming into her own in elementary school. You know, she just started second grade yesterday, so she's all swept up in that and probably thinking she's cooler than she used to be. And, you know, Webb is there trying to do everything she is. Everything she's into, he's into. And she does not care about that. And they will fight constantly a lot of the time. So, and I know that'll pass, but it is a phase we are in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I got three, so you're probably... You experience more angles of that than we do.
Yeah, Wyatt is 3.5 years younger than Warren, and he wants to do everything that Warren does, everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes Warren will shut him out. He'll go into a room. He's got something he's working on, a puzzle or whatever, and he doesn't want Wyatt to get involved because he'll mess everything up.
He'll mess it up.
So he'll go into his room and lock the door. But yeah, when he sets off in the yard, Wyatt's right behind him. They've got scooters, and if he's jumping on the furniture, Wyatt's right behind him. He's going to do it exactly the same way. But yeah, it's good stuff. And I don't even know where we started with all this, but.
Well, you know, closeness of I don't know how we started with the McArdle brothers, but you know, you guys being close as brothers, and I think about it often with Webb and Anna Gray, just like, you know, how are they going to be when they're in college, coming home from college, you know, or after college? Are they going to be like best friends and, or just close friends and come home to the house? You know, we're all, that's the dream, you know?
Oh yeah.
Hope everybody's just good friends. I hope they're just good friends. throughout life and open with each other about everything and share in their each other's lives with each other. That would just be super cool to see.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Looking ahead, I don't know how many people do this. Maybe when you have kids, you start thinking and envisioning, you know, the grandpa version of yourself and your house and whoever comes to visit on the holidays. Do you like, that kind of stuff.
I definitely think about like, how will I be perceived by my wife and kids at that age? And, you know, I love the thought of like a 4 and 5 kid household when they're like 25, 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
coming around at the holidays. And it's just a big old family time. And, but man, what it takes to get to that point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do it. That part would terrify me. I don't think I could start over.
Yeah. Do you ever, because there's some things that, that get on my nerves. Natalie, if I ever had my wife on for an episode, she would shatter the image that maybe I've created here, and say, oh, let me tell you what he's really like. But everybody gets a little grumpy. Do you ever think about when you're 70, 75, like, is this going to be exacerbated? Because I look at my dad sometimes and some of his crotchety ways or opinions. Do you ever wonder, like, if you're going to have a more enhanced grumpiness?
Sure. I think when, you know, I mean, even now, like, the older that I get now, the more comfortable I feel, you know,
expressing your displeasure
on things. Absolutely.
I love some disdain. I really love disdain. And yeah, you know, they, in wrestling, they call it turning heel, going mm-hmm. from a baby face to a heel. Hey, I'll turn heel in a heartbeat. I got enough channeling. Yeah,
what's the most common scenario for you? Like at a restaurant?
It's weird, you know, John. Traffic gets some people really wound up. Because I've just had so many road miles, I'm very conditioned to the things that happen out there. So I don't get too agitated on the road.
That's good.
And a lot of people maybe have caught on to this. Play something that on the radio or Sirius XM or whatever, your Spotify, that you like listening to. If you've got a great song that's playing and there's someone just right on your bumper, just sink into that song and just focus on driving. Don't worry about them or whatever's going on.
What if it was like, you know, a very, you know, extreme black metal song? I was encouraging you to do all the things.
Well, there are some songs that I will play that will sort of get out those feelings of, okay, this guy is really needs to give me some space here.
I know what you're saying.
I guess I lose patience sometimes with, like everybody does at restaurants. Well, not with the servers, or I don't really. Restaurant's not a great example. Where do I?
No, it's not, because I have, and I know you have worked on that side of things. Maybe like and I even have a tough time with this one, but like a cold call, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe a college alumni association calling you for money.
Yeah.
I've done that job.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A great job.
I've made the calls and I've received the calls. And
yeah, it was funny after college and after I didn't have that job anymore, I probably got that phone call maybe the first two times I got that phone call. First time I think I gave some money that I probably didn't have.
Wow.
And then the second time I didn't give any money, but was just very polite, you know, and you know, talked about how I had done that job. Like they care. And from then on, it was just like, you know, I don't know. Things just, I'm not not that proud of. I don't know that they got their full spiel out, if that makes sense.
There's a time and a place. Sometimes you want to have a little bit of fun with it and turn the tables.
Yeah. But I also know that they don't care. They don't care if I hang up the phone. They just don't. They're just hitting next on the computer screen to the next person.
I've worked call center jobs or one job. I think everybody should work in a restaurant or work in a call center or get some understanding of the person on the other end and how to handle them.
I do too. And just to understand that there's thousands of people out there who work thousands of different kinds of jobs like that. Even though, back to the AI thing, that's something I can see taking over that industry.
Yeah, in a hurry. I think, gosh, John, I really feel like it's 2024. When we get to 2029 and 2030, some of this stuff is really going to escalate. Some jobs,
It will have been extremely escalated at that point.
Another question about the future. You know, with kids these days, are you worried about the next generation? And we talk about all the stuff that we laughed at as 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, and the driving around with the windows down and the rambling man or whatever stuff that you liked back then, and just our childhoods. Do you think that with all the handheld devices and the video games and all this physical disconnect, is this a bad thing?
Some people, you know, are completely comfortable and happy with being in their
little cocoon,
their world, interacting with comfy, safe, snuggy. I don't know. Yes, I think it's a bad thing. I think people need to talk to each other on the phone. I think people need to sit down across from each other and have the shoot the breeze type conversations. I think it just keeps things about us as humans alive.
The one word that comes to mind when I worry about this stuff is empathy.
Yeah.
I feel like that might start to slide. Because, when you're not having conversations, you're not having eye contact, you know, you're just kind of in that virtual world, that lack of human connection and touching, feeling, shaking hands, or, you know, it doesn't have to, you know what I'm talking about, just being around other people for an open-ended discussion. It might have a detrimental effect. Where people just don't care if they're walking past somebody bleeding on the street or.
And you see that kind of stuff all the time on, you know, the absolutely endless scroll of short video content out there. There is so much content of people not having empathy for someone else and, you know, choosing to seize the moment of someone else's, you know, either rage moment, just, or complete disaster or disappointment or sadness. And instead of engaging with them in some way, you know, choose to capture it, you know, with their phone and post that just for whoever, you know, post it for views and likes and whatnot. If the entire, a huge portion of the human population just scrolls past that kind of content constantly, then absolutely empathy will erode away, and that can't be a good thing.
Well, my show is always going to be long form, and I've done a few short videos. I used to do this the first half or first 6 months of the project. I did some stuff on YouTube or Instagram, little short videos. I just can't manufacture it if it's not there. And if I only ever have 20 subscribers on YouTube versus 20,000, I don't care. I'm not trying to reach everybody. I'm not trying to scratch everybody's itch. I've always had like this, the driving force behind me continuing to do this show is if I still feel like it has value or I'm having fun doing it, that's why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it to blow up my profile. It's not a popularity contest. That's actually one of the reasons why my face, my likeness is not on the logo. It doesn't have to be.
Well, you know, it's like, and now you think, so I'm someone who I like to give you a phone call out of the blue, or not necessarily, it doesn't have to be out of the blue, but I just would prefer just to give a phone call instead of send a text sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I was very surprised the day I called you that you actually answered, because, you know, I mean, even a really good friend at this point, a lot of people have gotten to where it's almost uncomfortable to receive a phone call without a preemptive text, you know, to make sure it's okay to talk at this time or that time, or are you free to chat, you know, can I give you a phone call? You need to like prime them up for the conversation. But, you know, and that used to not be an option. You know, you just got a phone call, didn't have a clue who was calling you. So I think that even somehow that has changed the social dynamic of everyone in some way. I don't know how that affects everybody or as a whole, but it's changed how we all interact.
Oh, man.
Maybe not for the best way, but
I love calling my Uncle Mike. He loves to talk on the phone. And when he answers, and it's just excited, and you can hear like the highway whizzing past, you know, because he's driving in the background, and it's just that, Daniel, he calls me Daniel. He's like, Daniel, what's going on? You know, it's just an excited hello versus, I made a call a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to mention who it was, but it was somebody who said, hey, you should call this person. They might be interested in appearing on the show. And it was pretty stone cold. It was, who is this? Who are you? What do you need? It took about, you know, a good half minute or so to get over that hump, and we barely got over it. And I realized, oh man, not everybody likes this. Maybe I should have sent a text message, but yeah, you're right.
Maybe if you had your face on the cover of your podcast, you know, then.
And look, and that maybe that changes at some point, but I on my trailer, and I don't like listening to it. I mean, it's the first thing I ever recorded for this show, and it is what it is. But I do like that I made a promise on there of what I was going to deliver, and then I said something like, "This is not a vanity exercise. You're going to see Dan time and think, okay, well, I kind of have an idea of what this is about," and so I actually put a disclaimer in there that this is not for me to just, you know, stroke my own ego.
It's
yeah.
Time.
No, because there's enough
Dan's
people doing
time.
That. Yeah. Dan's time. Now, Jim Powell.
Yeah, no, I think you have stuck to that pretty well, I'd say. That jumped out to me when the first episode I heard. So kudos to you.
My wife, Natalie, she does think that it is. She calls Dan time. She's like, honey, that's your time. You need it. You started this podcast because me and the kids have been driving you crazy for the past 5 years, six, and you needed something. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong. Not entirely. Who knows, like, the impetus for any kind of, I mean, I needed a creative outlet, and I wanted to do this for a number of years, and finally just narrowed it down. I was like, how do I get started? What's the concept? And I finally just got out of bed one day and said, that's it. That's a start.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people with a lot of different things, especially in a bit of a creative endeavor, that's what freezes them up and prevents them from ever taking the first step to do anything. I mean, even just, what I like is that you weren't complete. You didn't have everything completely ironed out, you know, all of the technical aspects of everything. You didn't let that kind of stuff stop you. You know, you just, cause I will do that. That would be something that would be a barrier of entry for me is, you know, if I didn't feel like I had everything worked out perfectly, and it was the first episode was going to be maybe the best episode of all of them, I would have a really tough time taking the first step to do it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was pretty bare bones in the beginning. It still is, but if you go back and listen to, I think it's the Dan Lindemann episode number 3, and I met Dan. I can't wait to do a follow up with him, but he owns A&J Mugs downtown Pensacola, and I had this little handheld recorder. It was the first time I did a on-site interview, and I just had to turn the volume way up and sit it between us to capture everything. I haven't listened to that episode in a while, but I just knew, like you were saying back then, look, the quality is not going to be spectacular. The artwork is not even complete. My friend Rob Wilson was still creating or conceptualizing the current logo, but I didn't want to wait any longer. I was like, I'm going to get this thing going.
Yeah.
And I do this, John, and if people run me into it, I'll start talking about, it just becomes more Dan time. This is John Hunter time. So I got to stop this. We've got to put the focus back on you, John. And if we need to cut this, we can, but I understand in high school you were on the tennis team, right?
Oh yeah.
I remember this has nothing to do with your playing, but it's just those little things that you remember from back in the day. The Jack Daniels old number 7 t-shirt. And I just remember a story of you maybe getting into the Red Rocket and saying, you know, was it Coach Evans or somebody said, oh, old number 7, huh? You wore it to practice, or maybe this was a shirt that had a regular place in the rotation back then.
Yeah. I didn't think about things like that at the time. I mean, especially stylistically, clothing style, no. Would have never occurred to me that was a bad idea.
Could we wear?
Or you know, wearing, you know, gray baggy long pants with a exact same color gray t-shirt. That wouldn't occur to me that that's a bad idea.
It's like a full body suit. You know, of.
Yeah. I remember doing that one day, and I walked in the doors, and my friend Keith Scott was the first person to see me. And the first thing he said to me was, "It's gray day." I'll never forget that. I don't know why. And then that was the moment I looked down at myself and was like, what have you done? He just didn't even look in a mirror.
All right. I want to talk about one or two more things of substance here. All right. How about the unmentionables?
The Unmentionables.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about this film, what it meant to you then, what it means to you now, the cast, and...
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, that was the result of a collaboration with a writer friend of mine named John Crow.
Great guy.
Fantastic writer, great guy. If you know him, you love him. He used to... In high school and college, he would just sit around and write these ludicrous stories that were just completely off the wall. And they'd be coupled with crazy sort of graffiti-style artwork, a lot of which, for whatever reason, I still have, like, folded up and stuck in a box somewhere. But, yeah, at one point, you know, I'd been involved in the film industry for just a little while. And he came to me one day and was just like, I've got this short film idea, and I was hoping we could do it. And it's called The Unmentionables, and it's about sort of a secret society of backwards underwear wearing thugs who put their underwear on backwards every day. Simple as that. And they look down on everyone because only they know that they're doing something so rebellious, and no one else around them that they're interacting with knows that they're wearing their underwear backwards. I mean, now, and it's like this one long poem And I mean, it's completely ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. Every aspect of it was completely ridiculous. And
so the undergarments are going on backwards, but they're also wearing pants. So nobody would know, right?
Yeah. No one knows. Hmm. And to be clear, the tidy whities, that was a specific reference.
Oh gosh, with the flap.
Yeah. Hmm. Don't act like you don't know.
Now, if you put them on backwards, this is forcing you. You can't use the slit or the flap. You've got to pull down like you're 6 years old. Like you're one of my. Yeah. Yeah, all right. I got to ask you this now. Speaking of this, you've got a 5 year old. And if you don't want to go here, we don't have to, but I have these experiences in public restrooms with my 6 year old and also now my 3 year old who can use a urinal. He can handle himself standing up. John, I can't describe to you the fright and the how many times I've just been aghast at my son Wyatt steadying himself with his two hands on the exposed rim of a public men's room toilet seat. And I'll say, no, don't touch that. Don't touch that.
Don't touch anything. To be clear, don't touch anything that you see.
And then so he...
it's all contaminated.
He lifts his hands. He removes his hands from the rim. But he's in the middle of doing his business, so we can't clean them right away. So now I've got to hold those hands now. It's terrible. But anyway, but if you've got your underwear on
and
backwards.
At the same time, the pants are on the ground, you know, in a seemingly forming pool.
And
there's lots of things going wrong.
And Warren likes to use the urinal when possible, because you'll see sometimes that there's like a kid's urinal or one that's.
Yeah.
And so he'll use that one, but he's barely made the clearance. And like you said, if you're a grown man, you can spread the feet apart to miss that pool. But if you're a little boy, you have to kind of stand in it. And it's just, it is horrible.
I can't tell you how many times I've stood Webb on a toilet seat and just like held his arms and physically leaned him forward to the correct angle that it's going to go into the toilet so that touching nothing was a possibility.
I didn't think about that. Or the ADA bars on either side of the stall, I've never thought maybe they could stand on those if they can spread that far. But it's bad. I'll make Wyatt stand up on my shoes so he can keep his shoes off the floor. I don't know. It's
It gets pretty creative sometimes. It's a fun.
And you got to wash their hands and.
Or having to take your daughter into the men's restroom when it's just you.
Yeah.
That's always infuriating. That's when I look around at all the guys, you know, who have come and gone from that facility and just curse their names of what they put me and my daughter through that day.
Yes. Oh, man. I talk about this stuff probably a little more than I need to. I can't wrap up this part of it without asking you, are you a fan of the accelerator or are you a paper towels guy? I know, like, you know, environmentally speaking, we should love the accelerator, but some people do like
I could almost just walk outside and fling my hands around a bunch of times.
Well, you know,
the accelerator, I get the point of it, but it never actually, you have to stand there a pretty long time for it to completely do its job.
Yeah, you know, if you just walk out wet hands, kind of pat the jeans maybe twice or rub a couple times, and then as you're walking, leaving the restroom, like you said, you just kind of sling the arms around. And I'm telling you, before you know it, those hands, when you get out back outside and in the heat, they're dry before you get to the car. So, yeah, I think you're onto something. Yeah. I love the accelerator, but I've actually tried to have a representative on for an episode. I've not been able to line that up yet. But
to dedicate an episode solely on accelerator usage and etiquette.
Yeah, and I've
in its future.
I've I guess you could call it bashed. I've bashed World Dryer, World Dryers. You're starting to see
those
more.
Haven't changed since 1970 or whenever they came out.
Yeah, with
the 60s.
The instructions on there with push the button first, rub the hands, and then you're done. It's like, I know what I'm doing. I've known what I'm doing here.
You also didn't dry my hands. You just heated them up. You know.
I wonder if, do you think men's restrooms are always going to be this disgusting, even when we have this like robot society? because 50 years from now, it will be so much closer to this, you know, machine-led existence, but we'll still need to use the restroom. How bad will these places be then? I'll tell you this, the Target, if you go to Target, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but the urinal in the Target men's room is, without question, the best urinal in existence. That's all I'll say.
That's all I'm gonna
say. If you've been in search of the best, look no further. You've got a Target in your neighborhood. Test me out on this. You're going
to
love it.
Just don't even go shop there. Just go to the bathroom.
Yeah. They won't question you. Oh, gosh. We got to so the unmentionables, we got to wrap up, and then we probably got to wrap up on the
that was all of our best friends, and just basically we just had fun one afternoon filming a poorly shot, poorly lit, ridiculous concept, and you know, just all sort of hung out and partied and edited it that night. It was just a fun time to hang out. You know, we recorded all the music ourselves, which was fun, and did all like the vocal sound effects that were just completely ridiculous. I'm so proud of this that I, you know, listed it as private on my YouTube page, you know. No one could ever see it. But I do like to every now and then send it out as a nugget to a friend, you know. Remember this? Remember this day? It'll never get this good again.
So this is like the unreleased or not even a B-side of, if you were to compare it to a band, it's just like an unreleased
track.
Well,
someday when I've done works that are just so great, you know, that I'll be talked about in history books, the Unmentionables will become an undiscovered work of art, you know, and it'll be looked at in a new light with new meaning that no one could ever see, even me. It'll take on a whole new life.
Sometimes these things take a generation.
I'll be dead.
You know, it can, it's, you know, I mean, just like Michael J. Fox said, hey, you guys aren't ready for this, but your kids are going to love it.
Your kids are going to love it. That, you know, and it actually might become a style of wearing underwear at some point. And then at which point this film will be completely relevant. And nothing will happen after that. It'll still be just as bad.
John, I really do not want to end this conversation. I'm just having the time of my life.
It's been great.